Hi, and welcome to FAC. We're in a little series that we've called Positive Disruption, thinking for a moment or two about the ways our lives have been disrupted recently, but also thinking about the ways in which that disruption can have a positive effect on us. And to do that, we're reading through a strange little book in the Bible in the Old Testament called Ecclesiastes. If you missed last weekend, I'd love to encourage you to take some time to go back online and view that. It was a bit of an introduction to the whole series and to that book in particular, and I hope it would help you. During this lockdown period, lots of us have found things to be different. At the start, there was chaos trying to work from home. And as new routines settled in, many of us have found that we have a little more time on our hands. And just as we're figuring that out, it looks as though everything's changing and disrupting once again. But today I'd like us to think a little bit about time and its impact upon our lives. I was reading some stories recently about people who obviously have too much time in their hands that have necessitated strange warning labels on products. You've maybe seen some of these yourself. On a baby stroller that says, "Please remove child before folding the stroller." Hello. Or an air conditioner. "Do not drop out of a window, just in case you thought it might bounce." Prescription sleeping pills with the warning on the label, "May cause drowsiness." No kidding. A fireplace lighter that had on the bit you held, "Do not use near a fire." Underarm deodorant, "Don't spray in your eyes." What is wrong with these people? The bottom of a package of tiramisu dessert, "Do not hold upside down." Duh. Or the one I thought was best of all, a propane blowtorch, "Never use while sleeping." What are people doing? Apparently, some people have a lot of time in their hands. But I want us to think a little more deeply about time. What time is it? What time is it in your life? What time is it in your career? What time is it in your marriage or education? What time do you find yourselves in? Maybe if you're watching today, you could comment on the chat right now. How many of you use a watch like me to tell the time? How many of you prefer to use a cell phone? Just throw one word in there. Or maybe you couldn't care less about the time. You're not bothered by it at all. Be interesting to see how we all pan out what we use to tell time. But it's strange, this need that so often we have to know the time. It's become obsessive for us. What made it this way? Why do we have to do that? Maybe you can understand why we called this talk Timestamp. We get up, even if we're tired, because it's time to get up. We go to work, or we used to, or go to school, because it's time to go to school. Not necessarily because we want to. We eat, not always when we're hungry, but because it's time to eat. And we go to bed, at least when we're younger, not because we wanted to, but because it's time to go to bed. Who decided all these things for us, that we become slaves to time? How does that work? Sometimes this can become frustrating for us. You know, the sort of thing, stuck in traffic, trying to get somewhere, becoming slightly more irritated, waiting for a fuse to pop. You'd never see me do that, oh no. But there are so many things that happen that demonstrate to us we have little control over our lives. You know, the sort of thing, sickness, relational breakdown, death even, job loss, transfer to a new location, things beginning to slide away from you, a contract that evaporated, your cell phone dies in the middle of a conversation. There are all sorts of things that get us like a body blow. We're least expecting it. We're least able to cope. We're not entirely sure what we're going to do. Life gets the better of us. Time gets the better of us sometimes. And it's so frustrating. There's actually a great poem about this. I know you're probably thinking, well, poetry, who needs that? But it's in this book of Ecclesiastes we're reading. It's the first few verses of chapter 3. And I'd like you to watch and listen with me right now.
There is a time for everything, and a season for every activity under the heavens. A time to be born, and a time to die. A time to plant, and a time to uproot. A time to kill, and a time to heal. A time to tear down and a time to build. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to scatter stones and a time to gather them. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to search and a time to give up. A time to keep and a time to throw away. A time to tear and a time to mend. A time to be silent and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time for war and a time for peace.
Technically, this pairing of polar opposites is called merism. It's an inclusion from one end to the other, kind of like Amazon with their logo going from A to Z and meaning that they sell everything in between. And that means when we listen to those words, we've got to understand that they're descriptive, not prescriptive. We can't use them to justify war or violence. That's not what's going on here. But they're this inclusion that says all of the aspects of life are falling into this category. That's what verse 1 is all about. There's a time for everything, a season for every activity under the sun. The elements in the poem that you can read for yourself in Ecclesiastes 3, verses 2 through 8, these elements are presented as the common human experience. We find ourselves between those opposites all the way through life. None of us asked to be born. None of us really asked to die in so many ways, and yet here we are. These momentous events in life just seemingly happen to us. It's something we can't stop. And as you go through the pairings, you see all sorts of things. It begins with the food chain almost, the supply of food, a time to root, a time to uproot, a time to plant. Everything happens at the appropriate time. You try to get it out of sync, it's not going to work. You plant seeds in the middle of winter with snow on the ground, nothing's going to happen next year. They probably won't germinate or sprout or grow for you. We have to coordinate with what God gives us. And that's the problem for us. The schedule is given to us. We don't get to decide what goes on. God's already planned it. And then comes the next pair, a time to tear down and a time to build. Youth is a time for building. Muscles grow, coordination grows, our brain acquires all sorts of information. We become mature and develop. And then as we get older, we find things change too. Print on a book or on your tablet gets smaller and smaller, and I end up peering over my lenses to see what's going on. People seem to speak softer and softer till we can't hear what they're doing. Cars seem to go faster and faster, and we become a little nervous in life. Things don't work quite the way they used to. There's this time to tear down. But that's the way it's supposed to be, because that's the way God has planned it. There's a time to keep and a time to throw away. There are values that we hold dear that need to be kept close to our heart, never surrendered. There's other times when we need to clear out, perhaps the garage or the basement, or perhaps it's attitudes or behaviors in our life. Maybe it's gossip. Maybe it's speaking ill of somebody else. There are things that we really need to clear out, push away, and let go of. There's a time to be silent and a time to speak. A time when we know something that we shouldn't share with anybody else. We just need to leave it alone. And there's a time when we need to stand up and speak truth, like we've seen so recently in our society. There's a time for both. Maybe the challenge for all of us today is to try and figure out what season of life are we in. Maybe in the chat you could comment on that. Do you really know what season of life you're in? What is God speaking into your heart over these past few months when our world has been so different? What season are you in? Sometimes it's not one that we would want to be in for long. We don't like it. But perhaps God is using it to prepare us for what comes next. Maybe this is an instrumental moment that will lead us to the next stage of life. It's a beautiful poem. seemingly full of great advice, until you get to verse 9 of Ecclesiastes chapter 3. Let me read to you what comes immediately after this poem comes to an end. The author, the writer, he says this: "What do workers gain from their toil? I've seen the burden God has laid in the human race. He's made everything beautiful in its time. He's also set eternity in the human heart. Yet no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. I know that there's nothing better for people than to be happy and do good while they live. Each of them may eat and drink and find satisfaction in their toil. This is the gift of God. I know that everything God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it, and nothing can be taken from it. God does it so that people will fear him." We discover in verse 9 that there's something in this message of Ecclesiastes we find to be very real and very strange. It's almost depressing. What do we gain from our toil? What do we get from our hard work? The author is telling us something here. He's telling us that everything has a time and you don't get to choose it. Everything has a time and you don't have control over it. Everything happens at the time determined by God, and that's that. We know that, really. Sometimes you burst out laughing at a really inappropriate moment and it's hard to stop. I remember my mom telling me sometimes, "Stop laughing!" And it made it really hard to actually stop. It made her more irritated, made me more funny. It just gets worse. And sometimes when we're older, we discover we get angry. We can't stop being angry. It feels like we can't control ourselves. It feels we were locked into a world of events that we have no say over. None of us controlled our birth, and most of us will not control our death either. It sets the agenda for life, but we try. We love to control things. We love to have control over things, but to put it bluntly, life just happens. Our culture says, make something of yourself. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Take responsibility for your own life. Seize your destiny. Be captain of your own ship. And it works for a while, but it doesn't work for very long. How many of you today are doing the job you thought you would when you were younger, or the one you were trained for? I'm not. This is my second career. This was not how things started out for me. How many of you have buried parents long before you planned to? I have. That's not how it was supposed to be. How many of you have been laid off from work just now? Or even just getting trivial, how many of you have discovered your hair's gone prematurely gray more than you'd like? The list could go on and on, but the bottom line is, life just happens. It's like a dance, but we don't get to pick the tune. The seasons of life are like tides in the ocean. You can swim against them for a while, but eventually they'll catch you and they'll push you, and you get very little time to respond. The reality is, in this poem, there's very little sense of order in the pairings that come along. Bible scholars have tried for years to decipher it, and I think really that's the point. There is no order to them. They just seem like these rambling pairings from A to Z, because that's how life unfolds to us. It just seems to come disordered, chaotic. We don't get to plan what's going on. We want to discern an order because we'd like to know what comes next. We're not so fond of surprises in life, apart from parties. We would really like to know how to control what's next, but we have no idea what it will be. We end up discovering we're not really in control at all. Sometimes it feels like we've just got life all figured out, and then wham, it all changes again. And now we don't know what to do. We have just figured out at FAC over these past 3 months how to do church digitally to make sure that not just weekend services, but just about everything we do can be produced in a digital format for all of us to participate in, even at a distance. And now with the government's latest change, we're going to have to discover how to do touchless church, no touching surfaces. That's going to mean lots of changes. We've got the food bank here, the mustard seed are here. We've got this production factory going on, feeding thousands of children each week. There's a lot of things we'll have to figure out how to do. How do we sanitize this huge facility quickly between services? Just when we had it figured, now we know nothing and need to start all over again. I'd certainly value your prayer your support, your patience, as we try to figure all of this out and do the risk assessments that we need to in order to be fully ready to welcome people back into this campuses, both of them. Sometimes, though, we just think there's got to be a proper time, but we don't know what it is. We don't control the clock. We don't control the calendar. We don't really control our schedule. Everything seems to be out of control because God controls those things. And it makes us a little uncomfortable. What's the point? Why bother? This is the question the author's asking. What do workers get from their toil? Why do we even try so hard? Some people think the only purpose of life is to perpetuate itself. We're just here for biological reasons. Ice-T, rap artist, he once said this, "The only reason we're here is to reproduce. Just chill and reproduce. Keep the species alive." Don't know if that makes you want to get out of bed in the morning. Might make you want to get into bed, but that's a whole other thing. We don't know what the point of life is. And if life is out of our control, what are we doing? What's the advantage? What's the profit? What's the benefit of everything we've tried so hard for? We work so hard. We try so hard to stay healthy, and then everything slowly begins to fall apart. We get in a car wreck. There's job loss. A loved one dies. We catch some terrible disease. People we love get divorced or they get transferred far away and we can't spend life with them. Or we change schools. We have to leave our friends behind. We work. We get old. We discover our RSPs are worthless overnight. The bends of the river of time just take us to unexpected places. We feel we have no say in anything. But do you know what makes all this so hard? What makes it so challenging? Look at verse 11 in Ecclesiastes chapter 3. The author says this, "He, God, has also set eternity in human hearts." God has placed this sense of eternity in our hearts. Not only does God control the time and the schedule and the calendar, he's played this almost cruel trick on us, that he's placed this sense of eternity deep within us. There's this sense of timelessness. We can't control the little things of life, even though we wish we could. But deep at the core of our being is this big question of existence. We want our lives to matter. There has to be more than just this. There's an awareness of something beyond the immediate, but we can't quite put our finger on it. Think about it. The God, he says, who makes everything beautiful or everything appropriate in his time, has also put eternity in your heart. That's a big difference between us and animals. The big difference between us and your little kitten or the new pandemic puppy you got or your pet lizard or iguana. They don't have this sense of eternity in their hearts the way we do. Look at verse 10. He says, "I've seen the burden, the occupation, the task that God has laid in the human race." Do you know what that is? It isn't the job that you might be going to tomorrow morning. It isn't online school that you'll have to pick up again the next day or two. He's not talking about that sort of thing. It's much bigger than that. He's talking about the occupation that troubles our thoughts late at night when we're trying to figure life out. It's this longing for eternity, this longing for something more, and it bothers us. We don't know where to go with it. You see, this haunting need for significance, it drives us. It drives me. It drives us to put in inordinately long hours at work. It drives us towards perfectionism, to be the very best that we can be. It drives us to study hard, to get the grades that could propel us to the next part in our lives. The reason we do those things is the sense of eternity that God has placed in our hearts. It drives us for something bigger, something better, something more significant. It's this sense of greatness that leaves us dissatisfied with second place, with second chair, with coming second in event. That's not what we want. There's this sense of eternity in our hearts, and it drives us forward. It's the irony of our lives. It pushes us. But we never get there. We just don't. Some of us are used to being busy, or we were before we slowed down. We were busy to the point of exhaustion. But gnawing away inside of us, there is still this restlessness. God has put eternity in our hearts. We know it's got more than clothes. It's about more than friends. It's about more than salary. It's about more than job fulfillment. But we just can't get there. Oh, sure, there are things that help. The new outfit looks great and we're quite pleased about it. The new job is wonderful, the admiring look of our peers, the new trophy we can put on our shelf, a new relationship, but eventually those new clothes are lying crumpled on the floor in the corner. The new trophies on a shelf gathering dust with all of the others. The people that looked at you with admiration barely give you a second glance anymore. And we just don't get there. None of it satisfies. C.S. Lewis, who wrote the wonderful Narnia stories, the one best known, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, he once said this, "If I find in myself a desire that this world cannot fulfill, the most probable explanation is that I was made for another world." I think artists know this more than just about anybody else. And those of you who are artistic, who love to draw or paint, or into photography, perhaps you sculpt or you write music or you perform music. It'd be all sorts of ways that art shows up in our lives. There's something that we feel has to come out of us. We have to find this artistic expression in our lives. There's something deep in our soul wanting to come outside of us. Because we live in a world where we are human, but we long for more. The greatness of our souls was built for another world. We were made for eternity, and that's why we're restless. It's why we write books or poems. It's why we make music. It's why we paint and draw. There's something more. What should we do? How are we really supposed to live when our lives are stamped not just by time, but by eternity? What are we supposed to do? How do we live in this confusing reality? Well, the author tells us some ways we could. He says that we should live in the moment. The appropriate way to live in this polarity between A and Z, between all these things going on, between time and eternity, is to live in the moment, to enjoy the moment. Look at verses 12 and 13. He says this, "I know there is nothing better for people than to be happy and do good while they live, that each of them may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all their toil. This is the gift of God." The author's carpe diem, his seize the moment kind of thing, it's an expression of faith, not just gluttonous self-fulfillment. That's not actually what he's talking about. Just taking more, eating more, having more experiences, doing more things in life. That's not what he's doing. It's not about a new high or a bigger adrenaline rush or a new spouse because you're tired of the old one. That's not where he's going. It's not just a new career. And says what he's actually saying to us is, it's the patient, joyful embrace of reality, of life every day, as it comes our way, even if we don't get to make all of the choices. Enjoy the moment, he tells us. You see, just because God has stamped eternity in our hearts, it doesn't mean we can't live in today. It doesn't mean that we can't enjoy today. There are opportunities for us to seize in the moment between A and Z. There are things for us to do to make a difference. Seize the moment by asking God, "What would you have me to do today? What could I enjoy today?" Because in all of these moments in life, they are all good moments to pray. Whether we're happy or sad, whether we're enjoying it or frustrated, whether we feel we're near the beginning or near the end, we can always pray. Think about it. As you ask God, "What could I do?" Who could you make a phone call today that needs someone to talk to? Whose grass could you go and cut today and help them? Because that's hard for them to do by themselves. Who could you serve perhaps at the mustard seed and come alongside a person experiencing homelessness and give them some of your time? What about the kid that's been excluded at school? Could you go for a walk with them and let them know that you care? What would God have you to do today? Maybe it's even a simple thing. When did you last take your partner on a date? Even just a walk outside. Could you do that? What would God have you to do? When were you last involved in something that's greater than you? There's really no end to it. if we would learn to live for God and live for others, if we would learn to love God and love others, the possibility to live and enjoy the moment is endless. Live in the moment, he tells us. And then he says, fear God. Fear God. Look at verse 14. I know that everything God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it and nothing taken from it. So God does it so that people will fear him. That word fear, revere, or stand in awe, be afraid even. According to the author, we are caught here between this God who fixes everything that seems to be going on and the mystery of God, whose ways are pretty inscrutable. We don't always know what he's up to. Caught between time and eternity. Living between time and eternity. It's kind of like how the Apostle Paul once wrote when he said, we see through a glass darkly. We get hints, but we don't really know what's going on. The proper response is to stand in awe of God. Paul wrote this. He said to his friends once, when the set time had fully come, God sent his son, born of a woman, born under the law. Do you get it? At the set time, when the set time had come, before we'd given God a second thought, before we would ever care less, before we had imagined anything, God already had us on his mind and on his heart. When the set time came, he sent Jesus to come for us. He made the decision. He wanted us and his family, that we could be his sons and daughters at the right time, before we would do anything. God already had prepared the way and opened the door for each one of us. He made himself known to us. He made it possible for us to be in his family. He made our destiny known to us at the set time. God did. Paul also wrote this, and he said, you see, at just the right time, when we were still powerless, Christ died for the ungodly. At just the right time, Jesus offered his life as a sacrifice for you and for me. At just the right time, Jesus died so we could be set free from the burden of sin and death in our lives. At just the right time, Jesus gave himself so that we could be forgiven and brought into God's family. At just the right time, Jesus gave all he had for you. At just the right time. And while fear of God might have meant abject terror for the author of Ecclesiastes, for us on this side of the events of Jesus' life, on this side of his cross and resurrection, we discover that fear of God means to stand in awe of God, to honor him with everything that we have, to bless him and love him and respond to him. It means that we are free. We are enabled to live as God's children in light of eternity here in time. We can live within the boundaries God has given us. Instead of thinking to ourselves, what's the point of life? It seems miserable and debilitating. We discover the secret of life is to do life in the very presence of God himself, each and every day. Most of the struggle of life comes along because we want to be in charge. We want to control our own lives. Or maybe we're control freaks and we want to control the people round about us. We want to control our circumstances. We don't like things being out of control. That doesn't suit us. But when we discover that God wants us to know him and love him and experience his love and grace and fulfillment, when we discover that, we discover God wants to experience eternity with us. And even today, you could respond to that gift, that opportunity. By simply saying yes to Jesus, you could click the button on your chat right now that says, I want to receive Jesus. You could click a button that says, I need somebody to pray with me right now. Because a simple prayer that simply says, Jesus, I am tired of being stuck in time and this gnawing in my soul for eternity. I need you and I want you. I choose you because you've already chosen me. You could pray that right now. Someone will pray with you. But even us, who are the followers of Jesus, we find it hard not to be in control of our own lives. When God doesn't always go along with our plans, the honest truth is we sometimes sulk and get angry. We're tempted to throw faith away and go, what's the use? God won't do what I want. It doesn't work. There's little that's easy about following Jesus in the real world. I don't want to pretend otherwise. And especially in those tough places when we don't get to call the tune and we're not in charge. Nicholas Copernicus was a mathematician in the 16th century, I believe, who really made a fascinating discovery in his calculations that everything wasn't revolving around the Earth, but the Earth and the other planets were all revolving around the Sun. We call it heliocentric cosmology. Everything was going around the Sun. It took years for people to believe him. They really didn't. They thought he was wrong. But slowly over time, we discovered that's how things truly are. Max Lucado has written a lovely little book called It's Not About Me. He writes about Copernicus in there. He says this, could a Copernican shift be in order? Perhaps our place is not at the center of the universe. God does not exist to make a big deal out of us. We exist to make a big deal out of him. It's not about you. It's not about me. It is about him. And if you truly want to discover what life is all about, we'd soon discover it's actually all about him. Our purpose in life is to get to know the author of life. Our purpose in life is to discover and live out his purposes for our lives. It begins with this sense of letting go. Jesus, you can be in charge. I'll begin this new adventure with you, whatever that might mean, however complicated it'll be. I'm jumping in, all in. That's what faith actually means. I'm all yours. There are so many things that immobilize us, that paralyzes, that leave us feeling stuck or afraid. And yet Jesus told us, if we would choose life with him, if we would allow him to lead, he would always be with us to the very end of the age, no matter what goes on. And so today I'd like to invite you, don't sit life out, sitting on the fence, wondering what you're going to do. Your moment isn't tomorrow, or maybe in the fall, or maybe next year, or even just this summer. Your moment is right now. Live life now. Live life well. Embrace the moment. Choose to follow Jesus. Stand in awe of all that God has done and will do for you. Embrace his purpose for your life. Discover what your next step in the journey of faith might well be. And even if the tune right now is not one you would have chosen, it's a path that you would never have picked, I hope you choose to dance, to do the journey with Jesus, to follow him now, to follow him always. Would you pray with me, please? Father, today we find ourselves in a strange season of life. We feel caught between what life used to be and what it's going to be next. Caught between the fear of being outside and being with people and the desperate desire to stop being so lonely and for life to feel normal again. But even at a deeper level, we feel caught between the everyday and this longing for significance, eternity in our hearts. Lord, I want to pray for those of us who don't know Jesus, that today we could simply say, Jesus, I want you and I need you. I'm tired of trying to make something significant for my own life. I want to live for the purpose you have created me for. And so today I invite you to be part of my life. I confess my sin. I pray for your forgiveness. I ask for renewal, for a clean slate, a new start in life. Today I want to do whatever comes tomorrow, whatever this next season will be, I want to do it with you. And Lord, all of us, we're probably to some extent all trying to figure life out. What season are we in? And it's frustrating to us that we don't get to call the shots. But Father, I pray that you'd be gracious with us when we get frustrated or angry, that in your patience you would wait on us and help us. Help us to learn to depend upon you. Help us to learn to trust you. Help us to learn to follow you. Help us to live life well and to honor you. Help us not to let tomorrow or the rest of the year skip by, but to engage in what you're calling us to. Help us, we pray, in Jesus' name. Amen.